Hey there. It's time for a bonus episode, a second conversation with renowned sports bettor Billy Walters. Now, in part one of our chat, you heard all about Billy's life story as told in his excellent new book, Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. Well, there were two chapters in this book dedicated to his sports betting strategy. And Billy is looked at as one of the most successful sports gamblers of all time. And so he was nice enough to join me once again to spend a chunk of time talking specifically about why he's sharing these secrets to his success and specifics within some of those secrets as well. Billy, thank you for joining me once again. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, Troy. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I do really appreciate this second conversation with you because we focused our first conversation on your life story, which is a fascinating one that people should read about in your new book, Gambler. But as we talked about the first time around, you spent a couple of chapters sharing your sports gambling secrets, which for a lot of people who not only participate in sports gambling, but understand the industry, know that you are one of, if not the most successful sports gambler of all time. So as sort of a reset for folks who haven't listened to that first conversation just yet, why would you reveal these things that are considered secrets that have helped you get to the place that you're at right now? Because I think there's a noble cause in you doing so that I'd like people to hear about once again.
Well, Trey, actually, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have sold this information for $20 million. But I'm 77 years old, and you know, now you've got, sports betting is legalized in the majority of the United States, which is actually, you know, it's a dream that mine has actually came true. There's also, you know, risk to come with that. And I know what I went through as a young man, as a young sports bettor. And, you know, I went through a lot of ups, a lot of downs. I went through addiction. I was addicted to betting sports. And there's all kinds of misinformation out there today, you know, in regards to, you know, to betting sports. But I put this in there. I mean, this is my legacy. Everything that I know about sports betting is in there. The basic betting strategy that I put in the book, if you're an average sports bettor and you follow that, you got at least you got a chance to win. Otherwise, you've got no chance to win betting sports. If you have one account and you're taking one line and you don't have a strategy on when to bet, and you don't have a money management strategy to go along with it, you don't know what the right price is to buy half a point, you know, you don't know what the true odds you'll land on parlays or teasers, you absolutely have zero chance of winning betting sports. Zero. Now, you're going to put aside X number of dollars that you can afford to lose, and you say, look, this is recreation, it's my fun, you know, and I'm going to lose it, but I'm going to have some fun betting sports. Great. Go after it. It's a lot of fun. I don't know if anything gets much more fun than betting sports, but if you get involved in it and you think you're going to make a lot of money and you're going to get rich quick betting sports, that's a recipe for disaster. So let's say you're just starting to bet sports. I put all kinds of charts in the books, you know, that shows you the fair price to pay for each half point. It shows you how money line compares to the point spread so you can compare those and see which one's the best deal. And it shows you the true odds on parlays and teasers. And most people are under the impression that when they make a bet on a sporting event, they're laying 11 to win 10. A lot of these parlays and teasers, you're laying $1.30, $1.35, which, you know, it's just suicide. You got no chance. So there's information in there for every level of sports bettor. And for those who want to take it to the next level and try to become a professional handicapper, I added an additional, what I would call a senior master class version of that will explain to you exactly what I do, how I do it, and it gives you a formula if you want to become, you know, a professional doing this. I've explained to the world exactly how I do what I do.
Yeah, and you even provide the valuations that you give for a variety of factors in that additional masterclass chapter, and we will talk a little bit about that here shortly. First, though, you point out that the three key elements to successful sports betting are handicapping, betting strategy, and money management. And before we get to some of those, you also lay out a set of core principles at the start of the first chapter on your sports betting strategy. Why do you consider understanding the value of the half point the second most important factor in your sports betting success after handicapping?
if you don't take good numbers betting sports, you literally can't win. I mean, I subscribe to subscription services called Spank Odds, and it shows you the real-time odds of basically 100 sports books around the world. Okay, and if you've got five or six accounts and you can look up there, almost every game there's, you know, there's at least two or three different prices you can lay on each and every game. As an example, you know, some games may be, you know, one bookmaker may have it five, another one may have it 5.5. You know, one bookmaker may have the game 3 at 11 to 10. The other may have it 3 at minus 120 if you're betting on the favorite. It's even money if you bet on the underdog. It is mandatory that you take whatever the best price is in betting sports, because that's another thing. If you can actually be a decent handicapper, if you're not good at betting strategy, it's no sense you'll win. So the betting strategy, as I noted in the book, it's almost as important as the handicapping is. But if, you know, if you're just a regular sports bettor and, you know, you got a job like most people do and you're not doing this for a living, you're not spending $1.5 million, $2 million a year as I am in research and development, you don't have a bunch of professors and what have you working for you, the best chance you've got is to employ really good, sound, solid, basic strategy and making sure you get value for your money. You can't lay 3.5 on a game if you can lay 3 someplace else. You can't do that. Because if you do, you just can't win. I mean, yeah, you may win a game, but you will not win in the long run.
Within handicapping, you discuss the subject of home field advantage. And while it's commonly believed that home field advantage in football is worth 3 points, according to the numbers, it's actually closer to 2.5 points from 1974 to 2022. And in the last 4 years, as you point out, it was less than 1 point, a lot of that having to do with COVID. As we move further and further away from the pandemic, Billy, are you seeing home field advantage value increasing once again, or is it staying pretty stagnant at that less than point range?
That varies from team to team. I mean, we saw Buffalo is a really, really tough team at home. Their record is phenomenal there. It's much greater than, you know, what the league average is. Denver is an example. We all know about Denver because of the altitude and what have you there. But Las Vegas is an example. Home has almost no home field advantage because most of the games are played there. There's usually more visitors in the stadium than there are home fans. But as you noted in the book, we listed probably 40 factors that have some impact on what the point spread on the game could be or the potential outcome. You know, travel time, you know, playing surface, everybody's kind of familiar with those things. But, you know, the temperature the game's being played in and the weather. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks are pretty good in, you know, wet weather. Some quarterbacks are horrible in wet weather. They can't grip a ball. They don't throw it very well. So we list all those various factors in there for your consideration when you're looking at a game. And you don't have to be a pro handicapper to do this. That's why it's so much fun. A friend of mine, a lady, when the book first came out and she read the book, we were on a trip with her and her husband. Her husband's an avid football fan. Well, for 2 days, all she wanted to talk to me about was these factors. She said, you know, because the first time she watched football, her husband really didn't understand it all that well. But now she saw these various factors that go into deciding the game, and it really piqued her interest. She became engaged as a fan, and she told me, she said, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm going to have an idea of, you know, some of the factors that actually determine the outcome of these games, you know.
Yeah, one of the more interesting ones for me, and it makes sense, like it's logical, as somebody who's watched sports my entire life, is a team that's on the road for Monday Night Football. If they're on the road that very next week, they're at a huge disadvantage. I want to say it's like a +8 or something like that. So there are all sorts of different scenarios that you guys do a great job of laying out. And you don't always explain necessarily, but I think for somebody who has a certain intuitive understanding of sports, it makes sense.
Right.
So within betting strategy, you suggest to bet favorites early and underdogs late. Why?
That's typically the line moves. Typically, the public bets on favorites. So if you're going to bet on favorites, typically the line's going to go up. And if you're going to bet on an underdog, typically you wait till later to bet because you're going to get a higher number. Now, there are obviously exceptions to the rule. I also point out in the betting strategy in there's key numbers. And it's a real simple strategy as an example. Let's say line on the game's 3.5, and you're going to bet on the underdog. You want to take that 3.5 as fast as you can possibly take it. You don't take any chance of that game going to 3 because of the importance of the value of 3. And I list all the values of the different numbers in there. So if a game were to go to 4, the difference between taking 4 and taking 3.5 from a percentage standpoint is small. But if it were to go to 3 and you had to take 3 instead of 3.5, that is huge. On the other hand, if you're betting on a favorite and the line on the game was 3.5, you shouldn't even think about laying the 3.5 early. You should wait and hope that game goes down to 3 or 3 minus 20, which is like 3.25. Because if a game goes to 4 and you have to lay 4 instead of 3.5, it's not a big deal. The percentage difference between 3.5 and 4, if you're betting on a favorite, is small, very small compared to being able to lay 3 on a game. So there are exceptions to the rule, and I point that out in the betting strategy. But as a rule, the public's going to bet on favorites. Favorites go up. And as a rule, if you're betting on an underdog, you're going to get more value waiting until later, especially in the colleges. How many times, you know, you've seen some team play and they get beaten by 32 weeks in a row, and, you know, they're playing some national powerhouse the third week, and they couldn't stop anybody, and the powerhouse has won the last two games by 40 points. The guys who make the point spread, they know that. Their goal is to put out a point spread to get people bet on both sides of the game with equal amount of money. Whatever they put that spread out, the public's going to bet on a favorite for the reasons I pointed out, because, you know, the public's mind, you know, their memory is kind of short. They remember the last two or three games, and that's usually what factors into their decision. So let's say the odds maker knows the right line on a game, say it's 32. He's probably going to make it 35 to start with because of what I pointed out. And then when the public's done with it, it'll probably be 37, 37.5. So if you're looking to bet on the underdog in that situation, you definitely want to bet to wait till later. But again, their strategies, I gave you an example of 3.5 going both ways. I'll give you an example of 6.5 going both ways. If you're betting on a favorite and a game 6.5, you want to lay that 6.5 as fast as you can lay it. You don't want to let that game go to 7, because the difference between giving 6.5 and 7 from a percentage standpoint is enormous. If you're betting on the underdog, you want to wait. You want to wait, take a chance on it going to 7. If it goes to 7, percentage-wise, that's big. Game goes to 6 and you have to take 6 instead of 6.5, no big deal. You haven't lost a lot from a percentage standpoint. I laid all of that out in the betting strategy to explain each number to you. And in the games, you want to bet on favorites. Sometimes you want to bet on underdogs early. You know, there's exceptions to the rule. To the rule, and I've laid that out, you know, with the charts that I put in the book.
It's also important to know when to bet the point spread and when to bet the money line. Now, while every situation is different, is there a general rule with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's real simple. I mean, the money line, I put a chart in the book, and it shows you the equivalent of each number at 11 to 10 to a money line. If you're betting on the underdog, it shows you the equivalent, and if you're betting on a favorite, it shows you the equivalent. If you can get that number or a better price, you're better off with a money line. If you can't, you're better off betting a point spread. But there's charts in there that show you the value of every number. As an example, 3. If a game's 3 and you're looking to bet on a favorite, it shows you exactly what you can lay on the money line to be the equivalent of 3 at 11 to 10. If you can get it for less than that, it's a better deal. So you're laying less than 3. Yeah. As an example, if the money line's 10 or 15 cents cheaper than what I pointed out in the book, you're better off betting the money line because you're not laying 3, you're laying about 2 and 3/4, which is, you know, that's big. On the other hand, if you're betting on the underdog, I've explained to you, the chart in there shows you exactly the equivalent of plus 3 at 11 to 10. If you can get that price or better, bet the money line. If the money line isn't as well, but the point spread. So betting the money line can be a big advantage as long as you know what the right price is on the money line. If you don't know, you're flying in the dark. So, and so many people are unfortunately doing that today. That's the reason, it's one of the reasons I want to write this book and put all those charts in there, because all the new bettors, you know, like I said, they're under the assumption they're laying 11 to 10. And what's happened is you've kind of created a monopoly in the sports betting world. You've really only got six or seven companies, and they know they have a monopoly, and they've got a bunch of new bettors that really don't know, the right prices. And so what they've done, they've really marked up, and jacked up their pricing. These parlays and teasers, sometimes you land $1, $1.35 instead of land 11 to 10. I mean, it's suicide. You got no chance, but the average betting public, they don't know that. They think they're land 11 to 10. That's what they think.
In discussing money management, why do you discourage a gambler from risking more than 1% to 3% of their bankroll on a single bet?
Well, I mean, the thing that you have to do betting sports is, if at all possible, is take your emotions out of it. That means on a regular Sunday, let's say you're going to bet on four professional games, and the early games and the late games, let's say you lose all four of them, and which it can happen and will happen. And you got a Sunday night game, and all at once you're all steamed up, and I'm going to get even. And you run in, you bet on a game that you really don't have an opinion on, and you bet more money than you should bet. That's really a suicide there. I mean, and so many people do that. They allow emotions to dictate their decisions. When I was a younger guy, I did a lot of that myself, and I can assure you it doesn't work out. So. And you're going to have an opinion on games. Some games you're going to like more than you do others. And let's say here's a game and you're looking at it. Well, I like this side a little bit, you know. Well, okay, that would be, you know, you risk, you know, 1% of whatever money you set aside to bet on sports with. If it's a game that you like a lot and your opinion is way different than what the odds makers have it, and fine, risk 2 or 3%. But you never want to risk any more than that. Now, let's say you start off, I'll make it simple, with a $100 bankroll. Okay, let's say you're betting $1 to $3 a game, okay? Well, if you win, don't worry about it, because let's say your $100, it turns into $150. Okay, 3% now is 4.5 instead of $3. On the other hand, if you're going the other way, let's say, you're going through a cold streak, and let's say you lose 20 bucks. And you're betting 3% of $80, you're betting $2.40. So in other words, you got a business plan. You got something, you know, you're not going to, as we say in the gambling business, steam your money off because, you know, you're a loser, you know.
Another fascinating aspect of all of this is sports betting taxation. How are sports betting taxes different from taxes on things like real estate, stocks, bonds, and just general business?
Well, you know, the guys that got the sports legislation passed, they, I think, really did a disservice to sports bettors. Any money you win in the U.S. betting sports, it's all taxed at ordinary income. And if you're in a state, you obviously have to pay state taxes on top of that. And you can't carry forward a loss from one year to the next. As far as I know, it's the only thing in the IRS tax code, you can't carry forward a loss from one year to the next. So I'll give you an example. We're in December here. Let's say you lose 10 grand betting on football and bowl games or what have you. And let's say you win 10 grand back in January of 24. Okay, well, you've got a tax obligation. You got to pay taxes on that money you won in January of 24. You can't deduct the money you lost in December of 23. You can't carry forward a loss from one year to the next. And, you know, a lot of states, they're disappointed about the amount of revenue that they've gotten from sports gambling. Guys that would bet significant money on sports, guys that, Wall Street type guys, they're not going to bet on sports. I mean, any serious money, because betting on sports, and you're looking at paying taxes on ordinary income, you can't carry forward a loss from one year to the next. I mean, it is total suicide. You might as well just take a match and burn your money up, because you got no chance. You know, give an example in Europe and England is an example. Any money you win there betting on sports is tax-free. The reason it's tax-free is because almost no one wins. The country gets their money from the bookmakers, from the jobs it creates, the taxes that are created there. And if the people who got this legislation passed will sit down with the IRS and point out to them, if you want this business to grow, it needs to be treated fairly. It needs to be treated the way people are treated on Wall Street. You know, why should people betting on sports be subject to paying more taxes or less taxes than anyone else? It's not fair. So that's what the problem is. And you're going to have so many people. You know, the one great thing about what's going on with sports now, it's more transparent than it's ever been. All these new accounts are opened up. The IRS, they know who you are. They know where you live. They know everything there is about you. And let's say you get lucky and you win some money. You're going to start getting tax bills from the IRS that you were probably unaware of, and you're going to be subject to paying these taxes. But understand something, unless you lose the money back in the same year and you can prove it, you can't deduct your losses. You cannot carry forward losses from one year to the next. It's next to impossible to win betting sports to start with. And then if you do win, you're going to turn around in most cases and give the federal government over 50% of your money. And any money you lose, you can't carry forward a loss from one year to the next. You know, you don't hear anybody talking about this. This is something that must be addressed, because you're going to have a lot of little, you know, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be getting tax bills that they're unaware of this.
I've followed the legalization of sports gambling very closely because of my job. This is the first time I've heard any of it. And it's not surprising that it's coming from you, because you understand every aspect of this. It's why it's important to get your perspective on things. All right. When does buying points make sense? This is another fascinating point that you made within these chapters that I hadn't really considered before.
Oh, well, buying points makes sense as long as you can buy, you know, you can buy the point, whatever the half point is, or the point, as long as you can buy, you know, paying, you know, the fair amount of money for it. And that's the reason I put those charts in there to show you the value of each point. You know, a lot of people, if a game's 2.5, everybody knows, well, you know, want to buy the game up to 3. Well, buying a game from 2.5 to 3 is worth 22 cents additional. So you could actually lay, say, you know, minus 3 up to $1.32, and that would be the equivalent of 2.5 minus 10. Okay, but a lot of these bookmakers today, they'll charge you 35 or 40 cents to buy, you know, from 2.5 to 3. Well, it's not worth that. You're better off keeping the 2.5. And that's the reason I put those charts in there. But half points, you know, especially, you know, 3s, 7s, 6s, 10s, 14s, you know, numbers that land more frequently, if you can buy those half points at a fair price, they're worth buying. But if you can't, you're better off keeping the price you have. But if you don't know what the fair price is, you're better off not even trying to buy them, because with what's happened basically with this monopoly has been created, they've jacked the prices up on all these things because they've got all these new bettors that really don't know the difference. And the half points that are being offered for sale, I haven't seen many of them that are worth buying, unfortunately.
He is Billy Walters. Check out his new book. It is an incredible retelling of his amazing life story. It's called Gambler: Secrets from a Life at Risk. You can get it now wherever books are sold. Billy, thank you again for the additional time. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time on Books on Pod.